We have found an interview from 10 years ago, which was broadcast on Good Morning Ulster. Now, this is between the DUP's Nelson McCausland and the Irish language group Pobl's director, Janet Muller. She was arguing that an Irish language act should be a matter for Westminster. Have a listen to this from 10 years ago.
Well, I think everybody understands that the commitment originally given at St Andrews is a commitment to enact legislation through Westminster. And there's a very, very clear statement, an unequivocal statement from Maria Eagle in the document that was published on the 13th of March in the foreword. She says that unless the Assembly is fully functional from the 26th of March, which is last Monday, of course, then this will go to Westminster. And the reason for that is that it will fulfil the commitment that they gave at St Andrews. And I think that that's very, very, very clear commitment.
Well, the St Andrews Agreement says the government will introduce an Irish Language Act reflecting on the experience of Wales and Ireland and work with the incoming executive to enhance and protect the development of the Irish language. So clearly it envisaged the Assembly being involved.
Oh, I think that refers to the strategy. Legislation went through in November at Westminster, which has placed a duty on the Assembly, when it does get back together, to develop a strategy for the development and enhancement of the Irish language.
So that's already law, is it?
That's already law, yes.
Well, what are you going to do about it, Nelson McCausland? You're obliged by law to develop a strategy.
Well, of course, the two minority languages in Northern Ireland, which are the Irish language and the Ulster Scots language, there is already a responsibility on government to take both languages forward. And, of course, that lies within the context of the Council of Europe Charter for Regional Minority Languages. We believe that should be done on a basis of common sense and equality. What Janet Muller is looking for is preferential treatment for one minority language over another. And secondly, she's looking for a situation which would be extremely divisive, contentious and expensive. And I think a new executive coming in at Stormont will have many demands on its financial resources, and to have money squandered in the sort of way that she and her organisation are proposing would be ludicrous.
The St Andrews Agreement that I quoted earlier says, talks about reflecting on the experience of Wales. Now, you would have thought that someone like yourself, who cherishes Northern Ireland's position within the United Kingdom, would want equal treatment for Irish speakers and Welsh speakers.
Of course, the situation of the Welsh language in Wales is very different. The history of it is different from that of the Irish language in Northern Ireland. But what I would point out to you very clearly is that this is a matter which will pass to Stormont. It is a situation where, now that there is to be a restoration of devolution, this will become a matter for the devolved government.
And I suppose Irish language speakers,
language in Scotland, was dealt with by the Scottish Assembly. This would be dealt with by the Northern Ireland Assembly. And it's simply wishful thinking on the part of Janet Muller to think otherwise.
Yeah, but I think the worry on their part is that, given the dominance of the DUP now, that if it becomes a matter for the Assembly, that'll be the end of it.
It's what's called democracy.
Well, that's democracy for you. What do you say to that, Janet Muller?
Well, I think that the commitment was made in the St Andrews Agreement. It's for an Irish Language Act. The British government has since then progressed a 12-week consultation on an Irish Language Act, which attracted a very high level of response and a very high quality of response from the community and from the international community and from language experts. And 93% of the substantial written replies that were received by DECAL on that consultation were in support of a strong rights-based Irish Language Act.
Well, there you are, Nelson McCausland. That's her version of democracy.
No, in fact, that's an example of the way in which, over the years, the government has lavished and squandered money on Irish language organisations such as Pobl to enable them to have the infrastructure to produce that response. In fact, the capacity of her and her organisation and others to produce such a response is simply a reflection of how well and generously they've been treated over the years. We want to look at the whole subject of language and take it away from the sort of divisive approach that was promoted by Sinn Féin, particularly in relation to the Irish Language Act, because it was very much an item that was incorporated into the St Andrews Agreement at the behest of Sinn Féin. And quite clearly, Sinn Féin sees this as a cultural war. Sinn Féin spokespeople in the past have said every word spoken in Irish is another bullet in the freedom struggle. Well, now, I think we're into an era now when people are expecting all weapons, including cultural weapons, to be decommissioned.
Well, 10 years later, the same two people are back with us again. Nelson McCausland, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. And the Poll Director, Janet Mueller. Good morning to you, Janet.
Morning.
The reason we're doing this today is to have a discussion about, for those people, Janet, who say Northern Ireland goes round and round in circles. 10 years later, you two are about to have the same conversation.
Yes, well, it's a bit Groundhog Day, isn't it? I would have to say that, you know, in many ways, the picture's probably more depressing than that. Because really from the state was established in the north, the Irish language has been in a very disadvantageous position. It wasn't taught through the education system, and those were deliberate state decisions. The language was pushed to the side and marginalised, and every effort was made to ensure that it didn't really enter into any part of the structures of the state. So, and, you know, I would have to say we are the organisation that has spearheaded all of the expert work on the Irish Language Act. But there were many, many individuals, Irish speakers, who worked on the issue of rights long before we came along. And long after we are gone and all the other organisations that are on the ground now have gone, that will still be the case, you know, because legislation is about respect. What we don't have at the moment and have never had is an equal playing field or even a neutral position where the Irish language can thrive and bring all of the advantages that it does bring to this society.
Nelson McCausland, is it not embarrassing? I know you're not an MLA anymore, but you have been for most of your career. Is it not embarrassing that this morning, 10 years later, there was no compromise found? There was no agreement found? That was before Stormont was up and running, and now it's on the brink of Stormont not getting up again.
Well, of course, the reality is that there is a context to all of this, and the context is that the disagreement, the argument is around identity rather than language. It's not simply a matter of language. It is an issue about cultural identity. And indeed, on the BBC website at the weekend, I noticed an article where that point was actually being made by the BBC website itself. This is an issue around cultural identity and nationalist identity as well, and unionist identity. And those are things that have been around a lot longer than 10 years. They're issues that have been around a very long time. There is not a meeting of minds across Northern Ireland on those issues.
You've had 10 years to find a compromise.
And one has to look at that in that context that I'm saying there, that these are issues really not about language but about identity. And the tragedy, I think, is that a lot of the discussion, a lot of the debate, a lot of the conversation has been focused on just the Irish language. What we need to do is have a conversation here in Northern Ireland that looks at how all cultural traditions, not just language, but other cultural traditions, cultural identities, are accommodated in a way within Northern Ireland that is reasonable and fair.
Do you not think that some people listening to this programme today who do want devolution, who believe in local people being locally accountable to them, do you not think that they would be asking a simple question listening to you, which is, why weren't you having those conversations over the last 10 years so that we're not on the brink now as we are? Why is this all being done now? You were in government together.
It's something that Sinn Féin, I think, has largely avoided. And I think it is an issue that has been, because of all the pressure of government, somewhat set to the side. But that conversation, that broader conversation about identity and culture needs to be taken forward. I was struck in the interview there when I listened to it that the arguments, the reasons for rejecting a standalone Irish Language Act, the reasons for being against an Irish Language Act, are much the same now as they were 10 years ago. In fact, you talked about 2007. I pulled out before I came out this morning a copy of Pubble's own document, its proposal for an Irish Language Act in Northern Ireland, which actually was published in January 2006. And of course, one goes back beyond that. This is an issue which has been part of effectively an agenda promoted by Sinn Féin over a significantly longer period. This goes back 30 years. It goes back to the 80s, it goes back to the Anglo-Irish Agreement, it goes back to the Belfast Agreement. There's a long story there, and very often the focus is just on yesterday or today or even the last year or so, but really it is a longer story.
Having heard that interview today, and given where we are 10 years later, that nothing has moved, that there is still this impasse over the Irish Language Act, how can the party that you're so closely aligned to, the DUP, possibly publicly claim that they have no red lines? This is one of the biggest, longest red lines in the history of Northern Ireland. They will not accept a standalone Irish Language Act, and yet out of the other side of their mouth, they say they have no red lines.
The difference is this.
The longest red line in history.
There is a consensus right across the unionist community that an Irish Language Act, as demanded by Sinn Féin, by Pobl and Conrad na Gaeilge and others, is something that is unacceptable to the broad unionist community. That is just a fact. We've listened to not just folk from the DUP, but from the Ulster Unionist Party and other unionist parties.
So it is a red line.
No, that's not what I said. What I said was that this is something where there is a consensus across unionism. Every other party, as I understand it, at Stormont, is quite content to go back into Stormont, to establish an executive, to have devolution, to have delivery for the people of North Ireland. Every other party is ready to go back and then deal with these other issues. And it was significant that Arlene Foster made the point that you could have a parallel process whereby devolution was restored, government was back in place, and in parallel with that there was a process to look at these cultural issues. The one party that is standing out on its own is Sinn Féin, which is saying very clearly they will not even go back into the Assembly. And that is what is making them a different party from any other.
Jean and Lurgan, let's take some calls this morning. Morning to you, Jean.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Go ahead.
Stephen, I tell you what it is. A couple of quick points here. Number one is, first of all, is stop the MLA's wages and their expenses. Secondly is, James Brokenshire cannot make up his mind because he knows that the DUP is standing behind his boss and their votes counted. And I think he's just a wee bit scared to make a decision against his boss. And thirdly is, every man and woman in Northern Ireland should down tools and say enough is enough. It happened back in the 70s in the Ulster
Workers' Strike. Not realistic, is it? That would wreck the country. That would wreck the economy.
Well, isn't the MLA's wrecking the country at the moment, Stephen? There's people who can't even get a consultant to see a consultant for over 2 years. When the Ulster Workers' Council strikes happened back in the 70s, once the country went down, yes, I know people have to pay mortgages and have to feed their children. But enough is enough, and people should say, right, we're not voting you back in.
I've said this on a number of occasions. I'll say it again. These two parties, both Sinn Féin and the DUP, they position themselves as representing the working classes. As well as others. Hold on, let me make this point. In terms of the health service, there is very quickly becoming a two-tier class system in Northern Ireland with some medical operations. In other words, if you've got money, then you can buy private care and jump up a waiting list. And if you don't, and if you are that working class Sinn Féin or DUP voter, these waiting lists are getting longer and longer, and you're sitting on them. Whichever of these two parties you vote for, people with money can put their hand in their pocket and get seen by a top consultant within a couple of weeks. If you're a working class DUP Sinn Féin voter with some specialities, you can't. You will wait years. That's where we're currently at, Gene, in Northern Ireland.
Yes, but
and meanwhile, there is a 10-year discussion about Irish language.
Yes, but Stephen, that is not the point. The people of Northern Ireland, no matter what side, creed or denomination you come from, they are not interested in languages, or they're not interested this, that and the other thing. They are interested in being able to go in A&E and being seen, not in 5, 6, 24 hours, but being seen when they need to be seen. And they're not getting that, Stephen. And the people of Northern Ireland are fed up with this. It's extended time, extended time, extended time. Why doesn't James Brokenshire grow a set and say, right, either you do this or that's it, end of story?
Because he sees a possibility of a deal.
That is the only reason he sees a possibility for a deal, Stephen. As you said the other day, this could go on for 2 weeks, it could go on for 6 months, it could go on for 2 years. But at the same time, the politicians are still being paid their money. Whereas the people on the street are you know, they're falling to bits, Stephen. And you know you have people on your show every day, Stephen, saying the same thing. But it's about time that somebody just said, right, enough is enough. End of story.
Janet Miller, why should Sinn Féin not go back into government and then try to talk about the Irish Language Act? And if they did that, then at least they would be playing their part in trying to help public services, which a lot of their voters are affected by.
Well, I can only give an opinion. It's not up to me to say to political parties what they should be doing. They'll decide that for themselves. But I think that, you know, if you look at this situation, the very fact that we are still discussing this 10 years on shows that there has been no will whatsoever within Stormont, and there's been no will either at the level of either the Irish government or the British government to resolve this issue. I think that what happened is back in 2007, the DUP were enticed back into, or enticed into an assembly which they'd never been part of previously. And part of that deal that was done with them was that they could reject an Irish Language Act, and the water charges was part of that. And the fact that MLAs at that point were still getting paid again. I mean, all of that, it was included in a press statement from Peter Hain that was issued from his office. He said to Gerry Adams and Ian Paisley at the time, if you don't come into Stormont in time for the deadline, then the water charges will kick in, there will be an end to MLA's wages, and the Irish Language Act will be enacted at Westminster. So I think in this particular phase, the context of this is some quite dirty dealing being done by Westminster at that point. And I think, you know, this could have been resolved very easily at Westminster. Instead of doing that, they've kind of walked away from the issue and kept walking for 10 years. No. And this is a crucial point now. In 10 years' time, we cannot still be having this discussion.
Well, do you want to bet? Do you want to bet? Welcome to Northern Ireland. If it's happened for the last 10 years, it could be happening for another decade, for goodness sake.
I'm not saying it's impossible.
Nelson McCausland, on the issue that our caller brought up of MLA pay, Naomi Long said in this programme yesterday that MLA should have an immediate 30% pay cut, because she was arguing that 30% of what an MLA does would be business in the Assembly, the rest of it obviously constituency business. Would you support that now? Do you think that would at least restore public confidence that they're not being taken for a ride paying for MLAs who aren't going to work?
Of course, there is an alternative view, which is that the one party which is preventing the restoration of devolution, and that is, of course, Sinn Féin, is the one party which should be hit in its pocket. And when you have a situation where the Conservative government at Westminster won't even cut the finances that flow to the Sinn Féin MPs at Westminster, where they don't even attend and take part in debates, I think it is a rather bizarre situation that people, or a bizarre suggestion that people should be hit directly, when in fact the responsibility, the culpability lies with that one party. There is a tendency in Northern Ireland just to blame...
Why are you saying the culpability lies with one party?
Because
you know that the DUP,
look, Stephen,
are part of trying to... Yeah, they're part of the stalemate.
Yeah. Every party is part of a stalemate, because every other party is, Northern Ireland, ready to go back into the Assembly. Every other party is ready to go back and do business.
Well, so Sinn Féin.
One party... No. No, they're not.
If they get an Irish Language Act, they are.
If.
And the DUP.
And that is their red line. And Stephen, you can do your best. You can do your best to fudge the issue, and you can do your very best to make it more complicated than this. It's very simple. One party called Sinn Féin, and one party alone has said, we will not go back unless every other party says, let's get back and do business and let's get on with the job and we'll sort these things out.
Sorry, the DUP is clearly saying we will not go back because they're not, they're trying to find an agreement with Sinn Féin in order that they will go back. Do you honestly think the public are stupid, Nelson, that they think that the DUP will go into government no matter what?
Do you think
that is clearly not true?
And do you think, Stephen, that the people of Northern Ireland are so stupid that they don't understand that it is one party and one party alone? I think the vast majority of people understand Sinn Féin is the party that is culpable and should be made culpable and held responsible.
So are you telling me that the DUP do not have a red line over an Irish Language Act?
It is not a red line. It is simply the fact they're not going to agree to it.
So how is that not a red line?
That's a position. The thing is,
what's the difference between a position and a red line?
The position is, I don't know how you find this so difficult to understand, Stephen, because I talk to people every day and they find it very simple.
Well, then talk to me and talk slowly to me. What is the difference between a position and a red line?
I think, Stephen, I have been talking slowly. And it is a shame that you're not able to put those questions maybe to somebody who's a member of Sinn Féin, because the reality is that the DUP, the Ulster Unionist Party, the SDLP alliance, everybody else is ready to go back into Stormont and do business. One party says we will not go back unless we get our way.
Let me rephrase it. So if this is true, why is the DUP not in government? Why is the DUP not saying to Sinn Féin, we'll go back in right now?
Why is the DUP not in government?
Why are they not saying they...
Very simple thing.
Why won't they go back in no matter what Sinn Féin asks for?
Because the system only works where all of the parties, under a mandatory coalition, every party
yes,
has to
but
be.
But why is the DUP not found an agreement with Sinn Féin if they have no red lines?
It's not a red line, Stephen. It's simply a position. It's a practical position. And you may find
there's no difference between a position and a red line.
Sorry,
Nelson,
Stephen.
Is there?
Yeah, I think there is.
Well, what is there? Define it. What's the difference?
Well, I don't know, Stephen. You find it very difficult, I seem to think, to understand something that everybody else I talk to in Northern Ireland finds very simple. People generally understand that Sinn Féin took a position going into the election in March where they said, we will make sure that before we go back, there is the delivery of an Irish Language Act. And that is where the situation was created.
And Arlene Foster said there will never be an Irish Language Act under her watch.
And she said we will never vote.
But that's a position and not a red line.
Correct.
And yet Sinn Féin don't have red lines.
Let's forget about the term red
lines. Is this all not too important?
Yeah, Stephen.
Is this not also too important for this, Nelson?
I think it is too important for Sinn Féin to hold the people of Northern Ireland to ransom over pursuing a policy which dates back to the 1980s, a cultural policy which is one that they have pursued relentlessly, and they have been facilitated and assisted in that by a range of other organisations, and it is about the pursuing of a policy that was part of a broadening of the battlefield. I think it was Liam Clark talked about broadening the battlefield after the hunger strikes, when they opened up then the cultural front along with the military front, as well as bombing Northern Ireland out of the United Kingdom. They pursued a cultural strategy and a series of other strategies.
Sinn Féin were a political party. They didn't bomb anybody.
You make a good point there indeed, Stephen. Of course, the reality is that every week in their newspaper, Republican News, there was a little column called War News. And War News was a eulogy of all that the IRA had done. I think it was Tony Blair, of course, going back to those early days, who did say that there was an inextricable link.
Stay there for me 1 second, and we'll get the news, then we'll come back to some of our callers and we'll talk to the newsletter, Sam McBride.